Welcome everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's webinar, Ditch Boring Training, New Ways to Better Train and Engage Your Workforce. My name is Tara Brimberry. I'm an account manager here at Alchemy, and I'll be moderating the session today. So now I want to introduce today's speakers. First of all, I'm pleased to introduce Jennifer Therrien. She's the Manager of Talent Development with Ocean Spray Cranberries. Jennifer has over 16 years of experience in talent management with an emphasis on organizational development and instructional design. She joined the Ocean Spray family a little over a year ago, and her areas of focus include performance management, learning, career development, and succession planning. Prior to working at Ocean Spray, Jennifer worked at Goodyear, North American Tire, and Coca-Cola Enterprises. So, Jennifer, we're glad to have you. Next, I want to introduce Kristen Castro. She's my coworker here at Alchemy. She's our manager of enterprise learning for Alchemy Systems. Kristen brings a lot of years of experience in training, people and project management, staffing, and account management. Kristen previously managed a high-performance team of learning and development professionals at Conagra Foods with an emphasis on food safety training, leadership development, and functional skill building. She has also served as co-lead for the Grocery Manufacturers Association, GMA, with their training and education work group, and co-lead of the Conagra Women's Network. So we're glad to have Kristen on the call as well. So Jennifer's going to start first and is going to talk through some best practices for developing and delivering engaging training and talking about some methods that Ocean Spray uses to build training programs. And then Kristen will discuss how to properly track and measure training effectiveness and ways to keep critical concepts top of mind. With that, I'm going to hand it over to Jennifer and let her get started. Jennifer?
Okay, so there's nothing like starting a training with getting you all involved on the phone. So the first question is, how much time do you have to capture your audience? All right, so many of you felt about 30 seconds. We have about 60 seconds to capture the audience, but I think a good rule of thumb if you were shooting for 30, definitely, because 90 seconds is gone and they are lost. So as you can see in this chart, the attention span for people is on the decline since 2010. In fact, the average attention span of your participants is less than a fish in 2015. So it becomes imperative that capturing and engaging your audience is even more critical than ever before. In fact, less than 15% of your learners will successfully apply what they actually learn and what they were taught. Within 30 days, less than 80% of content is forgotten. And after 1 year, 90% of content is gone and lost forever. So really engaging your audience and telling a story has become critical, particularly because we have audiences that have very little attention span. So when we talk about the WIFM, which brings me to my favorite acronym, the What's in it for me, this is the question that every presenter must answer in 60 seconds or less. The WIFM is the bridge that connects you and your message to the audience before you. And while there may be many reasons why someone is hearing your message, you only need to connect with them on one WIFM, the one what's in it for them, to pull them in and get their attention and keep them with you as you take them on this journey. So it's up to you to keep them engaged throughout the rest of your message, but you have to have that hook in the beginning via that what's in it for me, that attention getter, to really get them engaged. So understanding the role of your audience is critical when we're talking about the what's in it for me, that WIFM. Understanding who is my audience and what is the role that they're going to play in this journey I'm taking them on. Are they here to be informed? Am I going to teach them something? Am I asking them for their feedback or input? Am I seeking their approval? So no matter whatever reason you are for presenting or having adults in front of you, understanding the what's in it for them through their lens is pivotal in understanding how to get their attention and to craft that message. But there are ways to definitely bring your story and your message to life by using the right triggers to stimulate not only just the cognitive, meaning their mind, but also their heart and their soul, meaning that as you tell a story or as you engage your audience in a presentation or take them on this journey with you, you need to engage them, and it's not just their mind, but you need to connect them and connect with them at all levels. And you can do that using a variety of visuals or props, sound or powerful imagery. So example to my right, this is an example that was designed to connect workplace safety practices to those employees. And really not just about, hey, be safe at work, but more about be safe at work because you have a life that you have to get back to. And you have children and family members waiting on you and expecting you to come home. And that power, that takes that safety message and makes it much more powerful because it's resonating not just with the mind, but when you see pictures of kids, you think of your own kids. And when you see family, you think of your own family. And it's just that resonation that it becomes much more powerful. So when we're talking about the story and the message and crafting your presentation or learning, there's a basic anatomy. And I know it's really simple. So I know many of you are thinking, I pretty much know this. But let's just go ahead and just cover this as we build upon it. So we have a beginning. And the beginning is very important because it provides context and it describes the landscape. So this is that setting for where we're about to go. The middle allows you to frame your message, provide key highlights. That's kind of the crux of your story. And the end is now what do I do with this information? What is the takeaway? Is there an ask? Are there next steps, recommendations? So again, that beginning, middle, and end and how you develop your training or instruction becomes very critical to make sure that as you're telling the story that you're hitting those pieces correctly so that it's engaging to your audience. So let's go ahead and walk through the story outline, if you will. As you engage in your audience, you begin a journey with them. And really think about it in sort of three acts. Act one is you introduce your characters, you're setting up the context, the background's introduced. And then act two, we begin to understand what our characters are doing and why they're what they're doing and what actions they're taking to lead up to that third and final act, that climactic moment and resolution. So let me go ahead. I was thinking about how I could best tell the classical story, and I think right now Marvel is huge with everyone, and so I'm going to go ahead and tell a story of Batman in three acts, and this is going to be short, but I think you're going to be able to follow along this kind of story and how it arcs. So act one, setting the stage, Batman, as a boy, loses his parents to a violent act of crime. And as an adult, he's wealthy. While he has money, it does not buy him happiness. In fact, he's lost, and he falls, and he hits rock bottom. Act two, as we start to see rising actions, we start to see Batman watch Gotham, the city he loves, start to fall in the hands of criminals. So now he starts to get upset and angry, and we start to see the actions of Batman starting to rise up and saying, someone has to take care of Gotham. In act three, our climax and falling action, Batman stands up, takes a stance, is protecting the city, gets the criminals, or most of them, out of Gotham. But the resolution to our story is that we know Batman is always going to be on call when he gets that Batman signal. So I know that was simple and it was Marvel, but I wanted to at least show you, we set the stage, we took you on a journey, we watched someone rise up, and the actions that they took, and the resolution, and what we know is that Gotham's protected by Batman. But this element, this classic story arc, is one that is the basic of any story, no matter what you're going to tell. So think of that in three acts. Think of it as a beginning, middle, and end. But really, as you're designing your material, really break it into kind of those three parts. And then think about, how do I engage my audience and keep them with me along the way? And while we are talking about a story, we can't lose sight of the reason that most of you are on the phone today is to learn or want to know a little bit more about how do you design learning to be engaging. And that really brings us to the first and big piece, which is understanding your learning objectives. So there's four main reasons for conducting training. You either are seeking a behavior change, you're either trying to introduce a process change, you want to build or refine a skill, or you want to build awareness. But there's really four main reasons that you would put folks in front of you or e-learning to train them. So when you're designing your content, you really need to have that objective in mind to not only understand to know why you're training, what you're training, but then how you're going to measure whether your training was effective or not based on the objectives you set forward. So just wanted to point out, we can't lose sight of our objective as to why we are teaching in the first place. So when we talk about course design, I really want you to just take a moment and think of yourself as an architect. Because when you are developing curriculum, or when you're even putting together a presentation, you truly are designing and putting your plans or blueprints in place. And when you're building content, you need to build it through the lens of the participant. And at times when you are developing curriculum, sometimes you get very much caught in the instructor mode, But really, when you're talking about engaging your audience and designing training that is effective and engaging and dynamic, it has to be through the lens of the learner and not the lens of the teacher. So you want to think about, when you are building your content, who are you speaking with and to whom? What are your key messages, and how much content do you need to convey those messages effectively? You also want to make sure that you anticipate your audience reaction to the messages. So whatever your message is, or whatever it is that you're teaching, how is your audience going to receive that message? Is it an emotionally charged topic? Is it going to be perceived as positive or negative? Or is it something really exciting, such as a new product launch, as an example? So really anticipating that will help allow you to craft and then figure out how to counter maybe some of the reactions that you might receive. The other important part is also duration. So thinking about, what is the minimum amount of time you need to convey your message, and what's the maximum amount of time you've allotted? And here's why duration becomes very important. When you communicate to an audience how long you're going to keep them, you have set an expectation. And I will tell you, most learners, including I'm sure yourselves, know that when you set that expectation, it starts to run long, you lose your audience because we're not getting out on time, or we're not finishing up when we said that we were. So just making sure that you think through that again when you have your architect hat on in designing your curriculum. So this is just something I wanted just to put in. I'm just going to cover it pretty quickly. When you're talking about content development, we at Ocean Spray also needed to come up with a way in terms of an approval workflow. Don't know what your organization has for workflow managing custom content that would be uploaded into Alchemy, as an example. So for us, this is our approval process. So let me just walk you through. Basically, it's if you're working with other departments on creating content, understanding, okay, here's the course, who needs to approve the course, and then this is an automated flow for us. So we get to understand the what's the training for, the who, the what, the where, the when, the how long, and what it looks like. And the reason for this is going to allow us to ensure consistency. It's going to allow us to ensure that learning going into Alchemy is actually up to the right standards from a file size, from a professionalism perspective, but also it allows you to have oversight into all the development being done, particularly as you pull in other departments. So just the takeaway here is, if you are getting into learning within your organization, something to think about is, how are you going to manage and kind of see what's being developed by who, when, and for what population. So again, coming back to course design, and you'll see I come back to it quite a bit, and it's not because repetition makes things stick, but it's because I cannot stress it enough that designing a course, it really is taking the right time to do it right, and really thinking through what it is that you want your learning to achieve. And so understanding before you start to design, or as you design your course, one of a good rule of thumb is to, as you're developing your content, is to have a script. Script your narration. So before you shout it out, write it out. Plan it out. And it really is, it takes on a life of its own. For anyone that's ever done this without any sort of script, it can literally take you hours and hours of rework. So my recommendation is, plan it out, script it out. I'm actually going to show you an example of that in just a moment. But by scripting it out, what you're going to say, it then allows you to pick the right visuals and the right sound to support your message. And so there's a question that you should always ask yourself anytime that, once you've got your script written, meaning what it is you're going to say, then for every visual, whether it be sound, a picture, a film, you ask yourself, will it enhance my message, or is it going to detract from my message? And don't cheat yourself on that. Make sure you ask it each and every time, because you'll be amazed that when you're looking at an image and it's against a script and you ask that question, you may find yourself thinking, nope, it detracts, and you'll go on to find a better image. So again, just wanted to pass that little tip along. But let's go ahead and take a look what a script looks like. What you're looking at here is one that I use for e-learning. But again, what it allows me to do is it allows me to tell me, okay, here's the slide I'm working on. Here's the script, so here's what I'm going to say. And again, like an architect, I really do plan this out to build. In this example, this script is a systems training on document control, and under the script portion, you'll see the lines that would be recorded for the voiceover portion. But it also allows us not only to know what we're going to say, but then what pictures, and then the time of that, the audio, any other, if I had any shots. So just, I have one spot where I have everything located, so I know what's going to go with what, how long that's going to take, and then also I could even add a files location, so I have everything in one spot. And this really does save you countless hours from a design and development perspective. So just wanted to share this with you. There's a ton of them online. Again, you could even just do an easy Excel file where you could just say, you know, the what, the who, picture, video, sound as an example. Okay, let's go ahead and talk a little bit more about picking our images. And I felt calling this out as its own slide was important because there's the power of an image. There's just power to imagery, and we know that. We're a very visual world right now, right? So we want to make sure that images are everything, and images just can't be thrown in, or they can, but they will definitely detract and disengage if they're the wrong image. So when you're picking your images, things to consider, does the image support the slide content? In this case, you see an image and you see that I have a picture of this girl, and you're probably wondering, well, how does that really play into what we're talking about? But it gets you thinking, right? In this case, could I have used a better image to talk to you about the power of imaging? Just this picture alone, there's a million different things you could think about. It is actually a pretty good image. It does invoke some different things depending on what you're looking at. The question is, was this the right picture for this slide? And I'll let you think about that as you walk away from the seminar, but it really is about when you're saying or presenting a slide with the right imagery. So does it support the message? Does it conflict or detract? Does the image convey the right message? Images should not confuse the learner, and this is an example. I'm not saying I'm confusing you, but I'm saying that I could have maybe picked a different image that maybe would have gone along the lines of supporting content, but I wanted to show some examples here. Is the image memorable? Is it going to resonate with your audience? You also need to think about other things such as size and clarity and consistency, particularly with size. So what you might go and get off the internet as an image, and then you resize it, or maybe you buy a small image, and then you go and you want to fill up half the PowerPoint slide as an example, except once you expand it, it becomes very blurry and it just doesn't look as clear, right? Because it doesn't have the resolution needed to support a larger size. So making sure that you think about that and how it's going to look. And also from a consistency perspective, when you're doing learning, e-learning, or even presentations, you really want to make sure as you're going through, if you're using a high amount of, like, let's say, cartoon imagery through your entire presentation, and then all of a sudden you throw in a photo, that actually jolts your audience because your audience has gotten used to the journey you're on, and it tended to be a cartoon one for the first 20 minutes, and all of a sudden, oop, a real photo. It actually does have that effect. So when you're thinking, and maybe you want that effect, but just thinking about consistency type and making sure that nothing is detracting from the journey that you're taking your folks on from a learning perspective. You want it to be engaging. You don't want it to be distracting. And this comes to engaging delivery. When we talk about engaging delivery, there are so many ways to do this and very powerful ways to do this, which is really an exciting time for us. If you're in the space of learning and development, you couldn't have a better time to be doing this type of work with all of the resources available to us. So big fan of delivering in a group-based setting, leveraging your folks in the audience, having them learn from each other. It just becomes very dynamic and creates an energy level all of its own. Encouraging discussion. No one wants to see you stand up there and talk, I promise you. It's really, if I could have you dialogue with me now, I would, because it really is the exchange of learning that becomes very powerful in the diversity of the audience as opposed to just one person speaking and everyone else just listening. So engaging your audience. And that comes back to that attention span, remember? I mean, if a fish has more attention span than we do in 2015, we need to make sure that we're changing it up, and we're changing it up pretty frequently to make sure we don't lose our audience along the way. We also want to incorporate interactive quizzes. So this is not just to ensure that as a presenter, if I'm doing quizzes, there's a reason, right? I can make sure I'm seeing how the retention is going, if I need to cover anything else or go back on a particular topic. But I'll tell you, people are competitive, and they like games. They like competitions. Even if it's a competition against the computer, like in this case, a lightning round, using that as part of the alchemy, which you'll see in this image right here, being involved and getting involved creates energy. And when there's energy in the room, you get synergy. And when there's synergy, right, there's learning. And when we walk away from an experience like that, at the end of it, there's retention. And that's our objective when we're teaching, right? We want people to be and retain the information. Now, I'm really passionate about this, but I have to tell you, so is my partner, Kristen, and she has an amazing story. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to turn it over to Kristen.
Thank you, Jennifer. Yes, I did want to just share an example from when I was at ConAgra Foods. We had developed some custom content allergen training, and in the allergen training, we actually inserted a couple of predetermined pause points in the training, and it was a group-based training setting, and that to give the workers the opportunity to share either verbally or by show of hands, depending upon, you know, how comfortable they felt. But we wanted them to share stories if they would, if they had ever been personally affected or impacted by food allergies. And the question that we used was, do you know someone or is there someone in your family who has a food allergy? And the discussion that would come as a result of that question in a group-based setting was very powerful. It gave workers the opportunity to share and demonstrate the very personal and human side of food allergies. And this technique actually lets the workers write their own story. And so the result of that was that as they go back to, you know, to their jobs and to the floor and to work, they're thinking about the impact of mishandling allergens in a food production facility. So we're going to transition now into measuring training effectiveness, and we're going to talk a little bit more about delivery, and then we're going to talk about measuring and then also about training effectiveness. So here is a great quote. If you don't know where you're going, when you get there, you'll be lost. Who doesn't love a Yogi Berra quote? But this is really kind of ties back to Jennifer's points about learning objectives. It's really important to know where you're going. Using storytelling and engaging your audience is so important, and you need to make sure that you're remembering that there is a point to this. There is a goal. Your training has a purpose, and what do you need your learners to know in your learning objectives? Are you looking for a behavior change? Are you trying to train workers on a process change? Whatever it is, what is your desired outcome? So, again, if you don't know where you're going, when you get there, you'll be lost, and you also won't know what to measure. So here's a few best practices for delivery. We're going to spend just a few more minutes on delivery before we move into measurement. So just as you put significant effort into creating your training, you want to make sure that you think through your plans to deliver it as well. A best practice to think about is, as you create training and make it available, to organize your training materials into learning plans and then deliver your training on a consistent schedule. So this does a couple of things. It gets you organized, it gets your learners organized as well, and then on the backside, it will make your reporting a little more straightforward as well. And, you know, different groups and different people will have a different take on what's in it for me. So your goal really, again, tying back to storytelling and making sure that your learning is engaging and relevant, is think about your what's in it for me. And you need to keep that in mind as well as you deliver and communicate about your training topics. Adult learners are very practical, and they want to immediately use what they have learned. So timing is also important as well. So as we think about time, you know, was it time well spent? As we all know, if you've spent any time at all working on creating training, you know, taking it through the process that Jennifer showed on her slide before, the approval process, it takes time to create it, it takes time to get it approved, it takes time to deliver it, and then your learners are spending time as well attending your training. So you want to make sure that the time that you are all investing in this training is time well spent. And as this slide says, time is money. We all know that. Time is definitely money. So you want to make sure that your workers are learning and that it's time well spent for them too. So what do you do? This slide actually talks a little bit about a statistic, and I think we can all understand this challenge. So nearly 50% of organizations say that they're challenged to make sure that what is being taught is learned and used. So think about that. 50% of the organizations out there think that that's one of their main challenges. And again, time is money for you and for your learners and for your company. So you want to make sure that you're using time wisely, that it's time well spent, and that as you are investing in creating training, your learners are invested in attending training, that it is time well spent and that you're getting the results that you're looking for. So here's another poll that we'd like you to take for us. So how do you currently measure the effectiveness of training in your operation? Some of the things that you can look at would be attendance, completion rates, employee pass rates, or all of the above. This is a journey for sure. I think most organizations feel this challenge. But you know what? We all have to start somewhere. And when you think about, you know, kind of starting on a journey, a training journey, the logical place to start is really with measuring activity. So it looks like we're mostly everybody is looking at all of these things. So people are measuring attendance, completion rates, employee pass rates. So we're doing all of that. So we are measuring some things here. So again, a logical place to start is measuring activity. So what I would say is just measure it. So I sort of stole that from Nike. You probably gathered that. But just measure it. We all have to start somewhere. And again, when I think back to my time at ConAgra Foods, this was definitely a journey. You have to start somewhere. And the logical place to start is by measuring activity. Are people taking the training? Are they passing it? What are their test scores? Can you measure job role competency? Attendance, that's kind of the basic one. Did they show up? And then things related to completion towards bigger overall training goals that would be outlined in learning plans. And then observations would also be another way to measure training effectiveness as well. So making training stick. Again, if we think back to the time that we've spent as training professionals, that our learners have spent attending training, we want to make sure that we're making training stick. So we want to reinforce the training by bringing those concepts again and again with our employees. So really, you know, kind of the once you've got your training going, you conduct your training on the topic. That's kind of where you start. And then other things that you can do to help your training stick is to use things like huddle topics. And you can conduct, and this happens all over the place, you know, huddle talks happen daily, weekly, monthly, and this helps reinforce your training message and it helps make your training stick. Other things that will improve stickiness as well is to make sure that you are using other methods like observations. You can do observations, go back and look. You've trained, you've reinforced the training through huddle talks. Now go observe the employee actually doing their job and observe them kind of in action, if you want to look at it that way. Another way to make sure that your training has stickiness to it is to keep that training topic at the top of your employee's mind all the time. And those you can do those types of things through keeping the message front and center, through posters, digital content, those types of things. I've been in manufacturing facilities where I've gone into the restroom, and in the restroom there's a little poster that kind of talks about whatever the training topic was that month. So anything that you can do to reinforce that training topic, make your training stick, make sure that you are using time well spent for everybody, for you and for your workers and for your company as well. So these are just a few examples of some of the things that we were just talking about in terms of making your training sticky. On the left there, we see the huddle guide. So this is an example of a huddle guide that that will help keep that training topic top of mind with employees once they've gone through the training. This is how you help it stick. Posters, you know, you think about that. Well, you know, they just walk by and glance at it, but that's the point. They walk by and glance at it, and that topic comes right back to the top of the mind. Hopefully they think back to the training, to the stories that you told, how you brought that message home to them during the training. Digital signage, another way to keep that message in front of workers all the time. And then the little one on the side there is Alchemy Coach, which is a tool to use for observation. I know it's a little hard to see, but that's what an observation would look like. On an iPad or a tablet. And observations are probably the best way to understand whether your training is really sticking is to actually go and look at it, and Coach is a great tool to help you do that. So some key factors to success, you want to engage employees. obviously, through your training. You want your message to be consistent and persistent. I like to use both of those. So make sure your training is consistent and persistent. If you're seeing that you have some gaps in your training, do it again. And use different ways to get to it, for sure. Use different methods to make your training stick, a variety of methods like we talked about. Conduct your training, reinforce the topic with huddle guides, those types of things. And then encourage feedback from your employees. And again, coach is a great way to encourage that conversation and that feedback. And by doing that, you can get your supervisors involved as well. So in review, we're just going to talk kind of through a few things that we went through here. So as Jennifer said, design ahead of time. Put your architect hat on and design ahead of time. And make sure that part of your design is your learning objectives. Again, to quote Yogi Berra, if you don't know where you're going, when you get there, you'll be lost and you won't know what to measure. I added that to his quote. But I think it's really important to make sure that as you design ahead of time, you keep those learning objectives in mind. And then get organized. Jennifer gave you some great suggestions on how to get organized. And I can't emphasize enough the importance of having a good, solid script. Make sure that you go through that. Make sure that it makes sense. Supplement your script with images that are consistent and that resonate with your audience, and then do your voice and your video third. That kind of puts it all together. And then review prior to publishing. This is kind of putting that second set of eyes or third or fourth set of eyes to review back to Jennifer's slide where she showed the approval process that they use at Ocean Spray. If you're kind of just starting in your journey, and you don't have a process that's quite that robust, just make sure that somebody is looking at your training before you're publishing it. Sometimes we get so close to it that we don't see some things that could be improved, and another set of eyes will find it. And then approach delivery with engagement in mind. Use storytelling to resonate with your audience, and it's a great way to get them, as Jennifer said, to engage heart, mind, and soul. And then you want to make sure that you are measuring effectiveness. Just measure it. Start somewhere. If you're not measuring things now, start with measuring activity. Are people there? Are they completing it? Are they scoring? Are they completing the training with the appropriate passing level in mind? So just measure it. Get started. And then reinforce. Make your training sticky. Use other methods to keep those training topics close to mind. Use things like huddle guides, observations, and all sorts of signage. So make your training stick. Reinforce the message. And I will turn it now back over to Tara for Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer and Kristen, both for that great presentation. I think we sometimes think just throwing some bullet points on PowerPoint is a good training, and it's good to be reminded that it takes a whole lot more thought and effort to really provide training that's effective and entertaining. So here's question number one. I'd love to hear more about how each of you have used SMEs, subject matter experts, in the training and development process. I'm wading through resistance between HR and operations on who is accountable for each part of training design and then the delivery. How have you seen this work well?
Oh, okay. So when I came into Ocean Spray, learning was actually, we're in the process of becoming a learning culture. And I think the first thing that I had to do was to influence or show the with them, the why, the what was it, how would it be beneficial for my department to leverage subject matter experts in the area of training and curriculum design so that I actually have leaders as teachers and I have experts designing Ocean Spray curriculum. And where I saw an opportunity to make the connection and that really started to sell it is that when you look at our organization, succession planning was a bit of a challenge because they didn't have a lot of development opportunities for some of their high performers or high potentials or those folks that were really tenured but experts in their field, and how do we continue to engage them. So I actually did a plan that said, hey, I would like to take our SMEs in these very specialized roles in R&D, some of our high potential managers, and help you leverage them to have them grow their development skills and also help design content. And we were actually able to, I was able to get it sold in. We've actually had about six e-learnings designed, and in fact, in our building redesign, it has taken over so much that they are actually have purchased and are building me a recording studio, an actual recording studio, because we have so many departments that have gotten excited. So my recommendation to you is to get one group or one department that could be an ambassador, and then just work with them, get that one small group, and before you know it, more and more groups will start to come to you and ask to be able to do it, because they'll hear from their peers how valuable it is and how great it's turning out. So I will turn that over to see what Kristen has to add. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And at ConAgra Foods, we did a lot of training in conjunction with subject matter experts. Pretty much everything that we did, we had SMEs involved. And I think a couple of things come to mind in terms of having a successful relationship, I guess, a productive working relationship with a subject matter expert, is to be very clear up front about expectations and make sure that the SME understands what their role is and what your role is as the training, expert in terms of, who does what. I think that's absolutely critical. And I agree with Jennifer. Find a group a couple groups of people that are really passionate, and find some champions in there and get some good success going working with SMEs, and it will actually spread. People will want to be involved and work with training on some of these things. And we also did a lot of leader-led training and SME-led training as well, because as I'm sure with most organizations, there's only so many people in the learning department. You can't do everything. So we really had to rely a lot on our SMEs for delivery of a lot of the training. And so it was at ConAgra, we would request suggest that if we were going to be working with someone out in the business and they were a subject matter expert, that actually be part of their either their development plan or even their performance objectives, would be to contribute as a subject matter expert to training. And that could be as helping us develop content or deliver it or both. So those were a couple things that we did, kind of that grassroots support, set clear expectations, and then make sure that it was, if possible, part of their actual performance evaluation or their development plan.
And I just want to throw in one other thing. I think when you get into working with SMEs, there's a perception that they know their job, they know the material, but they may not be comfortable on a microphone. They may not be comfortable in front of a camera. And if you think about your employee populations, I promise you that there are budding actors and actresses and folks that would love to get on a mic. And so having just even some open auditions for, hey, we're doing some employee training, because as long as you have the SME to get the subject matter expert content written, you can find the talent to deliver it that's going to have the right tone, the right voice, the right level of engagement. So just something to think about. But I promise you, you have more than enough talent to be able to pull world-class learning right from your own organization and not have to pay a dime for an actor. I promise you.
Okay, thank you. Great answers from both of you. Next question, with the what's in it for me, do you have the same content to be delivered to different groups of people, for example, supervisors, a line worker? Do you prepare different courses for each group, or do you make one, preparing it to the level that would be the most effective in the simplest terms, even if that bores the more advanced trainees?
Yeah, so I have an example of that. I have a corporate audience, and then I have a plant audience in which I had to develop a train the trainer. And so the concepts, the what's in it for me, meaning what I wanted to take away or how to engage the audience, I needed to make that workshop very interactive. For my folks in the manufacturing area, I did tailor the activity itself. So the majority of the content was the same, but the activity, the hands-on portion, was slightly different. So for my manufacturing audience, I had them write lesson plans for building an airplane. We actually built airplanes, and then we did teach-backs, and then evaluated following the four-step, and then flew a bunch of airplanes. But I will tell you, fully engaged and just a quick, it was a two-hour for that lead role, was very different than, meaning the activity was much more, a little more lengthy and comprehensive. When I got into the exempt and my corporate population. But so same nuts and bolts, but the activity was tailored different to really resonate with the different populations I have. So just that's my one thought. I don't know, Kristen, do you have anything from your perspective?
Yeah, I would echo that as well. And I think part of it too is, you know, is really understanding your audience and what the learning objectives are. Like your learning objectives might be slightly different for different audiences. You want them, you know, for a manager group or a supervisor group, what you're trying to build is awareness. And for your frontline workers, they might have to do something different. So, you know, looking at it from that perspective, what's the outcome? But I would agree with Jennifer. Lots of times the kind of the nuts and bolts content is the same. You may choose a different delivery method. You know, you might think that your manager population could cover that particular topic in an e-learn, whereas if you're going to deliver it to the same content to a frontline worker group, it might work best in a group-based setting where you could have more conversations. So I think there's a couple things to think about. You know, what are your learning objectives? What are you trying to accomplish? And it may vary from group to group. And then think about your delivery method and match that up with your objectives and your audience.
Okay, thank you. Next question says, my trainings are PowerPoint. Participants often complain that there are too many slides. Should I use more bullet points on the slides and just talk where the participants have to take more notes?
So this is Jen. So the standard for PowerPoint is usually no more than 4 lines and 1 image. That's kind of the standard when you're thinking about developing PowerPoint. And so the challenge you have in front of you is that you might have a lot more detail and you want some reference material that for those that want to be able to look at it later once they leave your session, walk away with. So my take to you is I think you definitely want to convey the right amount of text, meaning or image, to convey what it is you're saying. But I think people are looking to you as the speaker to bring the additional information and bring that slide to life. So in your notes section, you would have your script where you're going to bring and add the value to just reinforce the key concepts on the slide. But it may also have a takeaway or a reference material that you could have online or print out that would give them the additional takeaway so that you're not having 1,000 slides, but what's in front of them is resonating, it's powerful, and it has right imagery, and you're adding value through your delivery. But then there's a takeaway for those that want to look back and get the key points. You can never hurt with sending out reference or additional information. Another good rule of thumb is, you know, after you do your class, you could send out that reference material or the PowerPoint with your notes, as an example, as just a follow-up, you know, maybe even a week or 72 hours from the training, just to say, hey, here's what we talked about, and here's some more information. And it's just a way to keep that, as Kristen said, keep it sticky. So that's some takeaways for me. But Kristen, your thoughts?
Yeah, and I think, you know, kind of going back to one of the slides from the beginning of the presentation, remember that, you know, the human attention span now is less than a goldfish, so which is just frightening, but it's a fact. So when you kind of think about some of those things, a couple of things come to mind as possible suggestions. Would there be an opportunity to reorganize the material that you currently have in your PowerPoint to make some of it be pre-work? Would there be a way for people to come prepared with some information so that you could just review some of it and move into the more meaty parts of your training without knowing your topic? I'm just making some kind of general suggestions. But again, is there a way to move some of it into a pre-work? And could you perhaps reorganize the material so that it could be in a couple of sessions? Or could you change up the delivery a little bit so you do some pre-work classroom pieces? And, you know, would there be a way to put some of it into a video or something that they could kind of view at their leisure? So those would be some suggestions that I might have in terms of looking at different ways to kind of change up that delivery.
All right, thank you. Next question. What is your view on the effectiveness of more than one speaker during a training? Do you think this increases or decreases effectiveness?
Well, Jennifer and I think it increases because there's two of us.
We do.
We're doing it right now.
We do. You know, it can also help when you get some of those leaders as teachers. So I will say that you can have a very powerful delivery with, let's say, a skilled presenter, let's say, such as everyone on the call, and then as well as, let's say, that leader as a teacher or that subject matter expert. If those styles are complementary, meaning they offset each other very nicely and everyone knows their parts and what they're bringing to the presentation, it can absolutely enhance. But I think it's understanding who's bringing what and then how they kind of do that dance with each other through the presentation. I've seen it very effective. And then I've seen, you know, examples where you're not sure why that person was there because they're just doing, you know, they haven't added anything to it as an example. So I think it can work very well if it's thought out and it's bringing value to the learner, because Kristen talked about that. I mean, from an adult perspective, adults don't waste their time. It should be value added, and I should be able to use it the minute I walk out of the room. So if it's adding value, absolutely. And then it's just walking through that. So Kristen, your thought?
Yeah, and I think, it kind of depends on the delivery method. I know, you know, in creating e-learns, again, in my ConAgra days, whenever possible, we tried to use two voices. I think it adds interest, and I think it adds, you know, kind of keeps learners kind of on their toes a little bit with the two different voices, and it just adds some, you know, just some interest to it, basically. And I would agree with what Jennifer said as well, too, that if you're in a, you know, in a classroom setting and you have co-facilitators, you do need to make sure that they work well together, their styles complement each other, and that they have practiced enough that they know how to kind of go back and forth and transition. So I think as long as you, again, if you plan it out, you know, and you have complementary styles, I think it can work in a classroom, and I think it works pretty well in an e-learning setting.
Okay. Next question, I think this came out of your session. Kristen, you mentioned a huddle guide. So the question is, I'm not familiar with a huddle guide. What exactly is it?
What a great question. So I'll give you two answers. So when I was still at ConAgra, we did these as well. The learning department would create kind of additional materials that would kind of continue the conversation around the training topic all throughout the month. And so they were kind of small, bite-sized, reinforcements of whatever the training topic. So if the training topic of the month was allergens, then the huddle guides would all be basically very interactive, conversational, leader-led, generally out on the floor, question back and forth, and talking a little bit deeper into the topic of allergens. Now that I put on my Alchemy hat, Alchemy has these amazing huddle guides that we have created, and they're available basically on every food and workplace safety topic. And again, kind of the same concept, reinforcing the whatever the training topic is, lockout, tagout, and it is an interactive way to continue to cover those topics. And the way the Alchemy ones are built is they're very visual, great pictures on the backside where the person who would be facilitating the huddle, there are questions for them to ask, and they can kind of keep that conversation going. And the outside of the book that faces out to the people that are attending the huddle, very visual with some words as well. So I think you can go to our website and look at some examples of them. They're truly amazing and very, very, very good, very effective to make your training sticky.
Okay, I think this is going to be our last question. Then we'll have some closing comments here. My company employs 5 different language groups. We have translators on staff for 3 of those languages, but not on all shifts. What is the best way to make sure everyone is receiving and, more importantly, understanding the required training?
All right, Jennifer.
I was pondering that. I don't know if I have an answer for you, but I will say what we've learned and some watch out. So maybe I'll just do it this way. That really a lesson in translation where you think, having somebody that can speak the native language, like one of the employees, translate some of the material for you. I will say that that's a watch out. That translation, depending on how the person speaks and how they write, it may not, your material may not actually translate over the way that you intend it to. So, and you won't know that because you're not the one fluent in it. So I think having translation or paying for translation services, particularly if it's something you really need to be conveyed and you need to ensure that it's delivered in the way that you designed it, make the spend on translation costs because it is well worth it. And then from there, having that material translated effectively, you could then leverage some of your folks that speak that language or, you know, to do it. But we're struggling that at Ocean Spray now. As we have some facilities where, like in Chile, how do we do this? How do we bring the Spanish to that organization, particularly with some of our custom stuff? So maybe Kristen has some better answers than I did. But I'm definitely a fan of paying for the right translation because I've learned that lesson. So I'm sharing my experience with you all. Kristen?
This is a tough one. And this is, and you're not alone in your challenges with different languages and multiple languages. And I know at Conagra, we definitely had many languages spoken in our manufacturing facilities, and keeping up with that was always a challenge. And we did basically what Jennifer described. Depending upon the course and the content and the topic, we paid to have a lot of our stuff translated. But we also used employees who were native speakers to review even the professionally translated material, because sometimes a professional translation doesn't necessarily capture the specifics around a process in a food manufacturing facility. So it's a little bit of a catch-22, but I think for certain topics, high-impact topics, it definitely is worth it to pay for a professional translation than have a native speaker employee review it. Otherwise, probably the best thing is kind of the side-by-side, have a native speaker work directly with the folks who need to work through the material. It is a tough one. You're not alone. I don't think there's any one great answer, but you definitely want to look at that and try to be as accommodating as you can to make sure that people are getting it.
Yeah, thank you. And I'll add too, I think that's where competency checks are real important as well, especially if you're, the end of that question was asking if how do you know that they understand it. I think competency checks are huge. Even if it's just 3 or 4 questions at the end and hopefully in their language so you can verify that they did understand what was being said. So I'll just add that for my 2 cents worth. So thank you so much, Jennifer and Kristen. We appreciate your time today, and I want to thank everybody else that joined us on the call. We appreciate you taking your time out. We know you're busy, and we thank you for taking the time to listen to our conference.